Welcome to Conversations with Doc Martin, where we focus on extraordinary people doing extraordinary things. Please do not forget to hit the subscribe button and click on notifications so you don't miss out on our next guest. Today, we are absolutely privileged to be joined by Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar. Tal is the author of multiple international best-selling books. He taught two of the largest classes in Harvard University's history, positive psychology and the psychology of leadership. In addition, Tal is the co-founder and chief learning officer of the Happiness Studies Academy, of which I am a graduate, and Potential Life. So Tal, welcome to you this morning. It's an absolute privilege to have you join us. So thank you.
So great to be here, Martin. Thank you.
Excellent. So I'm so excited to talk to you because, as many of our viewers know, I am a huge advocate, a huge learner of positive psychology and what happiness is and what happiness isn't. And so I guess maybe to start, I kind of read your short bio. If you could kind of share with our listeners a little bit more in detail about your background and how HSA started, and then we can jump into happiness.
Great. So, you know, in a sense, there are two starting points to what I'm doing today. The first one happened earlier on in my life. The second, more recent. Mm-hmm. Let me address it chronologically.
Okay.
So I became interested in happiness because of my own unhappiness. Mm-hmm. So I was an undergraduate at Harvard studying computer science, doing well academically, doing well in sports. I played squash, mm-hmm. Doing okay socially, and yet being very unhappy. Mm-hmm. And I must say, it didn't make sense to me at the time, because I thought I checked all the boxes, at least mm-hmm. what I was told, or what I thought I was told. I remember it was a very, very cold Boston morning. Mm-hmm. And I went to my academic advisor and told her that I'm switching majors. This was my sophomore year. Mm-hmm. And I switched from computer science to philosophy and psychology. And the reason I switched was because I had two burning questions. Mm-hmm. One was, why aren't I happy? Two, how can I become happier?
Sure.
It very much started as a personal pursuit. Mm-hmm. And I went on to study and did become happier, and then wanted to share what I'd learned with others. So this was, time mm-hmm. B happened 20, 25 years later, mm-hmm. just a few years ago. I was on a flight, and a question suddenly came to me. And the question was, how is it that there is a field of study for psychology, which is what I'd been doing for the past two decades, for mm-hmm. philosophy, for history, for geography, for mm-hmm. medicine, you name it, but there is no field of study for happiness.
Yeah.
There is a positive psychology, but that's just the psychology of happiness. What about what neuroscientists have to say about happiness, and theologians and historians and economists and philosophers? And what about what movies have to teach us about happiness? And why isn't there a field, or rather an interdisciplinary field of study, that brings together these areas and synthesizes what they have to teach us about happiness? So I resolved then on that flight to help create mm-hmm. a field of happiness studies. And that's what I've been doing for the past 5 years or so.
Well, that's absolutely amazing. It's so interesting that you started to share that you ended up dovetailing into what you're doing today out of a service to self. And that's what I've come to understand in my brief time in studying happiness, in my journey to become a coach, is that we're all human and that we all have our challenges. And no matter who you are, how successful society pegs you to be, that isn't going to make you happy. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to admit that and address that. And, you know, even I myself, I mean, the main reason why I started down the road of coaching with IPEC was to basically save myself. I wasn't happy either. And so your teachings have been really life-changing for me. And so, as part of what you mentioned too about looking into philosophers and other elements there. So when we talk about happiness, there's a lot of people out there that talk about happiness, and there's a lot of misunderstandings relative to what happiness is, and And I find it very interesting on social media, sometimes people talk about, you know, toxic happiness or toxic positivity. And I always kind of get my feathers ruffled because I'm like, no, that's not what happiness is. So for you, Tal, what is happiness?
You know, Martin, I just have to comment on something that you said earlier, and then I'll go to the definition. You know, you said it comes from a personal pursuit.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big believer in the words of Carl Rogers, mm-hmm. who, you know, half a century ago or longer said, what is most personal is most general.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to a topic like happiness, like psychology in general. It's very difficult to teach it if we're not ourselves in the midst of it. If we're not dealing with it, if we're not grappling with these questions. So, you know, when I talk about research, and I talk a lot about research, mm-hmm. It's very personal. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not some theoretical article in, you know, in physics or in geography. And, mm-hmm. you know, these are fascinating and interesting. However, when it comes to psychology and when it comes to bringing about change as a coach or as a therapist or as a teacher, it has to be personal too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what, you know, and speaking of personal, many people say, well, you know, you can't really define happiness. It is personal. You know it when you see it, or you know it when you experience, sort of like beauty. I think that's partially true. At the same time, I think it is important to define it. And the reason it's important to define it, because once we know what we're looking for, what we're aspiring towards, what we're pursuing, we're more likely to get there. You know, there's a lovely part in the film Alice in Wonderland, mm-hmm. where she meets the Cheshire Cat,
mm-hmm.
and she asks the Cheshire Cat, "Where should I go?" Well, and he says, "Well, that depends on where you want to get to."
Exactly.
And she said, "I don't. It doesn't matter where I get you." Well, then he said, "It doesn't matter where you go." So, and I think in the same way, we want to know what happiness mm-hmm. is so that we can go in that direction. The definition that I subscribe to is the definition put forward by Helen Keller 100 years ago or so, where she said that for her, the only satisfactory definition of happiness is happiness as wholeness, WH, wholeness. Mm-hmm. And I subscribe to that because what she's saying essentially is that we need to look at the whole person.
Yes.
Not just at emotions, for example. Yeah, emotions are an important part of happiness, but that's not what happiness is. You know, meaning is a very important part of happiness, but it's not just meaning. Physical well-being, the, you know, mind-body connection, that's an important part of happiness. Interpersonal relationships, that's an important part of happiness, and so is learning. So happiness comprises the whole person, mm-hmm. or the well-being of the whole person.
Mm-hmm. I love that definition, and I really took it to heart, because truly my most, if you'll allow me to say it this way, fun days are the days that do comprise all of those various elements. And I know in our part two of our chat, we're going to talk about your Spire concept and the elements of whole being. And it's such a, it ends up becoming such a breakthrough when you understand that it's not just one thing, because our society today, it's so beholden to one thing or another. It's like, I got to be really, really fit, or I got to be really, really mindful, or I got to, you know, have a lot of friends, or I have to have a lot of likes. And, you know, I look on social media, and social media fascinates me, because you'll have certain individuals, men or women, doesn't matter, and they'll have tens of thousands of followers. And it's just a list of selfies with a beautiful physique. But it's like, you know, what are we really going for? And we're certainly today more challenged than any other time in our history. And so, you know, given the fact that now we've talked about happiness as a concept of whole being, given the challenges that we are all facing today, you know, what do you say to people about how to frankly, cope with what we're going through today in light of your understanding of positive psychology and happiness?
Yeah, you know, Martin, you mentioned social media and how you're fascinated by it. I am too, because, and I think so many people are, because it's such a powerful force.
Yes.
And a powerful force can be used for good or ill. I mean, take a simpler example, electricity. Is electricity good or bad? Well, it's a force. It depends what you use it for. Absolutely. You can use it to electrocute an innocent person, or you can use it to power up a life support system. What do we use it for? And with technology, this is the question. And right now, more often than not, unfortunately, it's being used for ill. Yeah. And let me just give two examples. One example is our emotional well-being. What do we see? What do we observe on social media? Everyone's doing great there. Yeah. You know, even during the pandemic, you know, everyone is learning how to cook, and everyone is spending real quality time finally with their with their loved ones, and everyone is learning to appreciate life more. Everyone except for me. Now, when I see that, I think, oh, something's wrong with me, but I don't want to appear like there's like there's something wrong with me. So I put similar posts, similar stories, and I contribute to this great deception. That is responsible for the Great Depression. You know, one of the, you know, anyone who spends more than 30 minutes with me has had to hear what I always say, which is give yourself the permission to be human. Why? Because I think it's a fundamental and important part of a happy life, which means give yourself the permission to experience sadness and anxiety and insecurity and fear and envy. And frustration and anger and hatred, you name it, the entire spectrum of human emotions. And that's so important to do. Why? Because there is a paradox at play here. And the paradox is that when we reject these painful emotions, when we do not give ourselves the permission to be human, these painful emotions only intensify, they grow stronger, they dominate. Our experiences as well as our action. And the paradox is that when we just allow ourselves to experience them, to say, oh, it's natural, part of being human, they do not overstay their welcome. They come in and they leave just as they came. I mentioned that the field of happiness studies is not just about psychology. It's also about every other discipline that can shed light on the human condition. One of the fields most certainly is poetry. And there is a beautiful poem that I've read numerous times and I've read to my students and to my kids countless times, called The Guest House. It's by Rumi, a Sufi poet from the 13th century. And in The Guest House, he talks about how we need to invite in, welcome, embrace any and all emotions, any and all thoughts, as if they were messages from the beyond. Now, messages from the beyond or not, I don't know. But what I do know is that Rumi was absolutely right. And we do ourselves a disservice when we stand guard at the door and say, okay, this emotion, I'll have this one. Maybe not, go away. We pay a high price for it.
Absolutely.
So embracing the full range of human emotions is important. And sometimes social media gets in the way. Of that.
Absolutely.
The second thing is that where social media often hurts more than helps is that it encourages us or makes it easy for us to have virtual rather than real in-person relationships. 1,000 friends on social media, no substitute for that, one BFF in person.
Totally.
And of course, during you know, lockdown or quarantine or in general, the pandemic that is upon us now, it's more difficult to have those in-person interactions. And yet, as much as possible now, and certainly hopefully in the very near future, we'll be able to have more of them. No substitute for that.
It's interesting you when, you know, you're talking about the social media and what we're looking at and how it's all positive and there's no negative. We're putting on this basic mask. And I was reading through my notes the last couple of evenings, and one of the things I noticed that you brought up quite a number of times in the course, and has been a challenge in my own life, and I know is a challenge for everybody, is our inner thoughts. And you talked quite a number of times about self-perception theory. And, you know, what we end up telling ourselves, and, you know, Michael Singer calls it the inner roommate. It's something I quote all the time. And that made a huge impact on my life too, as it relates to understanding that you're not the voice in your head, you're the one who hears it. So let's talk just a moment or two about that whole concept of self-perception theory and how we are talking to ourselves and how detrimental that can be.
Yeah. So, you know, the reason why I do talk a lot about self-perception theory, why I think it's so important is the following. So just a little bit of background about the theory. It was coined in the 1960s by Gerald Bem, who was a professor at Cornell. And essentially what he says is that we form ideas about ourselves in the same way that we form ideas about others. So, for example, if I see someone behaving kindly towards another person, you know, giving them or providing them help, being generous, I will conclude from that, oh, nice person, good person. If I see someone, you know, hurting another person, I'll conclude the opposite about them. That's how that's how we form perceptions about other people through seeing what they do. And what Daryl Bem is saying is that we form perceptions about ourselves in the same way. Meaning if we see ourselves acting, behaving in a certain way, say courageously, oh, I must be courageous. Acting kindly and generously, oh, I must be a kind, good person. And so on. Now, why is that so important? Specifically because of all that chatter in our head, in our inner roommate. So, because we can have all this chatter. However, if we behave according to what we perceive as the best version of ourselves, over time, that chatter, which is very often negative, will turn, will become positive chatter if we see ourselves behaving according to the best version of ourselves. So for instance, the voice in me can say, you know, I'm no good, I can't do anything, I'm scared. That's okay, it's natural. Again, this is just their thought. Remember the guest house, bring them in. And yet, if I have this voice and recognize that it's just a voice, and then say, I can still act courageously. I can still act with courage and do it. Then I will perceive myself from the outside behaving accordingly. And over time, my self-perception, the way I perceive myself, will change. And will change and will be aligned with the best version of myself, with the way I just acted and behaved. You know, action trumps thoughts. Action trumps feelings. It's what we do that matters most. I'll give you another example. You know, I can experience envy towards my best friend, which I have in the past. You know, my best friend is, you know, successful, thriving, wonderful on so many levels. That's why, you know, I like him so much. And yet I felt some envy at times. So what? All that means is that I'm human. I can still choose to act generously, benevolently, with love towards my friend. Action trumps emotion. Action trumps thoughts.
I absolutely love that. And I've really, I know in the course you also talked about the whole concept of fake it till you make it relative to that. And it's interesting, going back to social media again, I caught some posts in the last couple of months, somebody made that comment and a lot of people railed on that, and they were taking it in a different direction. It was not the the psychological elements. It was kind of the other elements of being somebody you're not. But this is all about, because I've done this myself. If I get up and I'm having a bad day, I put on clothes that I enjoy. I do an activity that I enjoy, and my actions, you know, I put the smile on my face. You talked about the research around, you know, if you smile, it impacts your mood, those kind of things. So I think that's critically important. So as we wrap up our first session of two, I'd love to ask you kind of one final question before we wrap up, which is kind of the antithesis, which is, if someone were to say to you, what is happiness not? What is not happiness?
Yeah. Happiness is not smiling all the time. Happiness is not experiencing a constant high. Mm-hmm. A happy life also comprises sadness and mm-hmm. disappointment and struggles and fear. These are all part of the human condition. So probably the most detrimental misconception of happiness is equating happiness with pleasure. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not against pleasure. I think it's wonderful and we should strive to experience it as much as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, seek pleasure, avoid pain. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we need to also understand that a full and fulfilling life, a happy life, mm-hmm. Comprises the full range of human emotions. And I'll say even more than that. Mm-hmm. The foundation of happiness is allowing in unhappiness. The foundation of happiness is giving ourselves the permission to be human, to experience the full range of human emotions.
I think that's fantastic. Wonderful words to kind of conclude our first session, because in our next session, we're going to talk more in detail about what actually comprises happiness. And so, Tal, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Below, I will post Dr. Ben-Shahar's information about the Happiness Studies Academy and Potential Life. Please don't forget to subscribe to this channel. Click the notification buttons, and you can always find me on martinmendelsohn.com. And lastly, remember, as I always say, life speaks to you. And if you think it doesn't, you're not listening. Take care, everyone. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.